Well, let's have a moment of silence as we come together into our shared space. So, welcome everyone. I had the experience yesterday of witnessing a memorial service yesterday afternoon that it was took place in Los Angeles, but it was nationwide and in fact worldwide in its reach, and it was called May We Gather. And it was a memorial service for Asian ancestors. And it was at a Buddhist temple in Los Angeles that was vandalized, statues were broken, it was set afire. There have been 6 temples in Fremont, California that have been vandalized, several across California, and in fact, all over the country where there are Asian Buddhist temples. And as you know, there has been people have been spat on, they've been shoved. One man was knocked over and died because he hit his head. Yesterday was the 49th day after the killings in the Atlanta area at the spas that took the lives of 8 women, including 6 Asian women. And in Buddhist tradition, the 49th day is an important day of transition for the soul and also for the survivors. And so that was the choosing of this date. And it really gave memoriam to all those Asians who have been killed by violence since the first Chinese came to this country in around 1850. And this most recent spate of violence, I really wanted to witness this service because it's very easy for me, and you know, we're coming from literally both sides of the country through the center, just even for our small group right here. But for me, living in rural Utah, it's sort of an enclave, and it's easy to feel distant from these happenings and from so many others. And I know it is going on here. I know that Asian kids are being bullied in school, and our Asian neighbors are having you know, things said to them in line at the grocery store. But we don't have temples. We haven't had anyone injured so badly that it's made the news, and it's easy to just sort of think it's distant. I thank Maureen for making it very, very immediate to me through she and her husband and living in New York, where the incidents are so frequent at this point. So it was really powerful to attend, and it was an hour and a half, and I had thought I would probably be there to stay for half an hour. We had made, before I knew about this, we'd made plans for dinner, And I was so moved by it. And I did stay for the hour and a half. And it is, I will put a link to it, because I would, any of you who have time or have an interest, it really reminded me of the power of ritual, of ceremony, of tradition, and of community. And in the, this has had been organized over a period of time. There were, as I say, temples and individuals and priests all over the world who were standing in support. There were many, many different Buddhist traditions, monks and priests who took part in this ceremony. And just a little paragraph out of the organizing materials. When someone is hurting, we come together as community. We gather because our lives are inexorably interlinked. We do not suffer alone, nor do we heal alone. Only when we gather as a Sangha, as a community, can we truly support each other's freedom. And I was reminded too of the incredible power of the compassion and wisdom of this lineage. And that's really at the heart of all the wisdom traditions. In Buddhist practice, there is a tradition at the end of practice to say the merit of the practice. And which is really saying we do not practice just by or for ourselves. What the merit, which it can have many different phrasings, but the simple one that I learned is, may our practice be of merit to ourselves, to our family and friends, to all those we know and all those we don't know, and to all beings everywhere throughout space and time. And we can, you know, we can think that this practice is just for ourselves, but it really isn't. Transformation, if we want transformation on a global level, it really does begin with us. And the more aware we are, the more still we are, the less moved we are by winds of passion and anger and upset, the more we're able to support everyone in our most immediate communities, and it radiates out. And to really hear for so many people speak from so many different temples, and in each case affirm the beauty of our interconnectedness, that the depth of that teaching of the Buddhas, that hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. That is the ancient and eternal law. And to realize that this practice is activism, that this practice is courageous. And it just touched me so deeply. As I say, I'll put a link to the recording on YouTube. And when I had decided today to look at mindfulness of the body, and because several of you are dealing with chronic pain and issues and other health issues, and others have talked to me about insomnia, and mindfulness of the body can help with that. Mindfulness in general can help with that. And I was looking back and thinking about what we would do today. I went back to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who has been the real pioneer of bringing what he terms mindfulness-based stress reduction into wide acceptance throughout medicine, throughout pain management, stress management, working with post-traumatic stress disorder. In his book, Full Catastrophe Living, which again, I'll put a link on to that. But he begins with talking about how when people come to the stress reduction clinic at the University of Massachusetts Hospital, one of the things as they enter a program of training that they spend some time on is really getting people to be clear about why they are practicing. You know, practice, mindfulness practice is a non-doing, and to commit to that, to take time to not do in our very to-do based culture, you know, to do that and to do that with any regularity. He feels, and I think he's absolutely right, you need to have a reason. You need to feel that this is a commitment that's worth doing. And at the clinics, most of the people who come because they're in significant physical or emotional distress. They have chronic pain, they have illness or injury, or they're suffering from traumatic stress disorder or from anxiety or whatever. And I think beneath that is it too is that what helps is to know the depth of the truth that this practice is not just for you or just for your increasing comfort, that it really does have to do with wholeness. And one thing that we talk about a lot in this training is that you can have significant illness or injury or debilitation and still move towards wholeness. And in that wholeness, as we work towards our own wholeness, we really are working toward wholeness of the whole, that it is an unselfish commitment. It may be the most unselfish commitment that we can make. So I just sort of wanted to start with that. And it was really refreshing to read Jon Kabat-Zinn again. He's such, I like so much the way that he talks about things and thinks about things and works with other people. And one of the things that he, from the very beginning, that he works with people on is really seeing things afresh. In the training that they do, there is generally a very long period at the beginning of doing a body scan every day, generally for a month, working with the recording, the same recording every day for a month. And the interesting thing is that it's never the same. You know, it's the same words, but it's never the same experience, which is true with whatever mindfulness practice we do, with just sitting with the breath. It's never the same any 2 days in a row. And he likes to remind people of the freshness with which you can come to each encounter. And he talks about the freshness that children have. And he tells this story about his son who really loved their dog. And I can't remember the dog's name, let's just say Henry. But when his son was two, one time he asked his father, "Dad, is there a person inside Henry?" You know, and I believe that. I think there's some wonderful, you know, spirit in a dog suit in my dog Chaco. But we don't think to ask that question. Children think to ask that question. I remember somebody telling me about their child. They were having a dinner party and their 2 or 3 year old child was upstairs, supposedly asleep. And in the middle of the dinner party came down the stairs, buck naked, right into the middle of the dining room and said, "I'm barefoot all over." You know, it's a way of coming to things fresh that we can tend to lose as we get older and we know how things are. And so that's a reminder to have and to bring to our practice, to just see it fresh each time. So I'm going to lead us today in a body scan, and I would just invite you to meet your body as if you had never seen it or inhabited it before. Just come to it with that childlike freshness.